Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Steve Greenfield. Steve ran for Congress in New Paltz. Well, he ran in the 19th Congressional District of New York. And Steve is here to talk about Joe Biden. So when you heard, Steve, that Joe Biden was going to consider running for president, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was that he is the only person named so far as a potential candidate that would be most likely to lose the election. And, that was, the idea that the thing everyone's talking about from a Democratic Party perspective is that the only important thing right now is to pick someone who can beat Trump. And yet the biggest media buzz, and even right now, the highest polling person, even though he has not yet declared, is the one person least likely of the whole bunch. And all of them have deficiencies. But the one that is the least likely to be able to defeat Trump, just like, in 2016, is what they're setting up to select again. And the insanity of doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, it just boggles my mind.
But, Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator from New York, is polling maybe like 1 or 2 percentage points. How could you say that Joe Biden would do worse than she would?
Well, because that's in terms of where they stand right now, in terms of whether they can win the primary and become a Democratic Party nominee. And so what's happening right now is that those polls are about Democrats, trying to speculate about who they think they should support in order to achieve the ultimate goal, which is defeating Trump. So the polls that refer to how people are positioned right now in the minds of the pre-voting Democratic Party public isn't really germane to whether or not the person being discussed can defeat Trump. That's a much wider poll. The thing to remember about Gillibrand and all the people that are, not polling well, Beto O'Rourke and most of the group that have declared, is that hardly any of them are actually running for president. They're running for vice president. If you look at their geographic distribution, they're from states where the whoever becomes the nominee could seek to build, a second base of support to provide what's called ticket balance, to provide maybe a victory in a key swing state, so that the electoral vote will go more their way because they're swinging a couple of the purple states in their own direction. And so, about 10 of the people that have declared for president so far are not running for president. Gillibrand is there in case, whoever wins the nomination thinks they need a woman. Or someone from New York. O'Rourke is there, and he's already speaking about this, right, that he thinks he can swing Texas and get those, 26, whatever it is, electoral votes to go to the Democrats. They're all in very specific geographic positions and from specific demographic groups that the Democrats will want in their coalition. But, hardly any of them are actually running for president, right? Kamala Harris is running for president. Bernie Sanders is running for president. Joe Biden is running for president. There are a handful of them that are running for president. The rest are running for vice president. So I don't really pay much attention to the ones that are running for vice president. That's kind of inside party business that the nominee will decide, in July of 2020.
So you're not particularly fond of Joe Biden, and Joe Biden is not particularly fond of people who have student loan debt. So kind of tell us the background of why he's no friend of people who have student debt.
Yes. Okay. Well, Joe Biden, there are a lot of people in Congress that you'll see have what are called signature issues, right? I mean, John Conyers back in the 1990s, his signature issue was Medicare for All. You know, he wrote H.R. 626, the first comprehensive bill. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, even though it's a watered-down version from what serious environmentalists would like to see, she's making the Green New Deal her signature issue. Joe Biden actually made not permitting the discharge of debt through bankruptcies his signature issue back in the early part of the first George Bush administration in the early 2000s. He actually made giving priority to on these debts to banks, and while allowing, you know, corporations to continue to have the same bankruptcy debt discharge protections that they've always had, while taking them away from ordinary consumers that took on debt, you know, and it's, you know, particularly germane to student debt, because the two categories of debt that loom the largest in bankruptcy and in people defaulting on debt are student debt and medical debt. Right. And you would think that at this current juncture that the Democratic Party would be, you know, stepping up to these things as signature issues because of how many millions of people, tens of millions of people are bankrupt and never again to receive credit and defaulted on their loans because of medical and student debt. And these are the two things that the mainstream Democrats are working hardest not to undo. Joe Biden in particular, as I said, he was the leader in Congress, not even the Republicans, although they certainly agreed with him. But Joe Biden was the leader of the movement to take away bankruptcy protection from student loan debt holders. So this is really an unforgivable act. This is the most burdened, the most debt burdened young adult generation in the history of the United States. And it is really Joe Biden who is substantially responsible for that. That is his heartfelt conviction, you know. So you're not going to get a Congress to act on this crisis, and for a President Joe Biden not to veto anything if they should act, because his revenue stream and his area of service in Delaware, where most of the banks of the United States are incorporated, so that they could avoid paying state corporate taxes in Delaware, and that Joe Biden has consistently served them through the entire career that he's held without skipping a single day, that anyone could be talking credibly about people wanting to vote for Joe Biden and not feel that crushing sense of disappointment that year after year causes so many people to just stay home and not vote. It boggles my mind that this conversation is even being held.
You know, with 44, maybe upwards of 45, 46 million people who have student debt in this country, and I'd say, let's say maybe half of them are Democrats. How many of those, let's say 23, 24 million Americans realize how toxic Joe Biden is to the student loan debt crisis?
Probably none, because it's not a sexy issue. Okay, like how the crisis developed, who are the people in Congress that are responsible for favoring the banks over the borrowers? That's not something that's on the news every day. You know, what's on the news every day are things that get better ratings. Like back when Joe Biden was engineering this law, George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Donald Rumsfeld, and Condoleezza Rice, and even Robert Mueller, because people forget he was one of the people in on this too. They were busy setting us up to invade Iraq. You know, we were already in Afghanistan. 9/11 had happened. You know, the Patriot Act was underway. This was really sort of a low visibility issue at that time, and this is one of the rare cases where, you know, I don't really blame the press for not making this a critical issue for public awareness at the time. There was some press going on about it, obviously, because I was aware of it. You know, you were aware of it. There were people that followed other issues besides the headlong rush into illegal invasions. But how can you stack up this bankruptcy protection question against, you know, against international war, against people being afraid of anthrax, against people, you know, being afraid of 9/11, against the United States military moving in full force, you know, into a foreign country, death, destruction, explosions on television every night. You know, I can't really fault either the media or the public for not having had this on their radar while it was happening. I do fault the media today for having spent the last 2.5 years peddling a massive conspiracy theory for which there was never a shred of credible evidence, bringing this back to where we are today. Now that the big Russiagate is now proven to have been, you know, nothing but a conspiracy from its inception, that the press and the Democratic Party, see, the Democratic Party does not want people thinking about the student loan crisis, because if they did, they'd be thinking about how that crisis was actually generated by Joe Biden and the Democratic Party and not by the Republicans. The purpose of the Democratic Party is to keep people focused on the failings of the Republicans. And so the press has been focused, you know, and unlike the invasion of Iraq, which was a real thing, right? We were building up to that, and people were selling it on television, and then we invaded it. This one wasn't even real. We have been subject to a campaign of willful distraction by the Democratic Party to keep us from being able to properly account for the legislation that the Democrats are responsible for. You know, it's a brilliant program. Why would we be thinking about the student debt crisis and about who was responsible for generating it, and about who was responsible for preventing students who are burdened from these loans from protecting themselves by declaring bankruptcy, when we could all be terrified that Putin is running America? You know, it's a great system of distraction that's based on having press access, right? How much press access does somebody who's concerned about the student loan crisis actually have? Is there someone occasionally interviewed on national public radio, like speaking at the Commonwealth Club? You know, yeah, sure, once every 6 months that could come up on the cycle of topics for policy nerds, you know, that listen to public radio. You know, there are blogs and podcasts like yours that are very low traffic. You know, and it's not like MSNBC is taking up this issue, like, you know, although who knows what they're going to do now that Russiagate's collapsed and they don't have a theme to broadcast on anymore. But you can be sure that they're not going to. Nobody wants to talk about the student loan crisis, because if we talk about the student loan crisis, we're going to be talking about Democratic Party legislation that generated the crisis and prevented bankruptcy protection from the people suffering under it. So it's not like the media is going to give access to this conversation.
So when this was first done in the early 2000s, and, you know, people were in a frenzy over the Patriot Act and another war and so forth. So if my assumption is correct, the big banks in Delaware said, "Hey, Joe, let's pass this. Nobody will even notice." And Joe Biden said, "Okay, I'm your servant. I'll do what you want." Would that be the correct scenario?
Well, you know, that is the correct scenario in terms of the chronology of it. But, you know, I don't take Joe Biden to be someone who sort of did this because the people that bankroll him wanted it done. They bankroll him because he's a true believer. Okay, one of the things we need to do, you know, in the progressive discourse in this country is to recognize that people in government don't necessarily do what their donors want them to do in the traditional sense of being bribed into doing it. It kind of works in the reverse of that. The campaign finance money flows to the people who genuinely, passionately believe in what the corporations want. You know, if you recognize it from that perspective, people sometimes think, people make the erroneous assumption that if you could change the way that the money flows, that the people who are in office might vote differently. But that's not really the case. The people who are in office because they believe in those things. That's why they got financed. And if you alter the way the campaign finance system works and don't replace the people that are already holding those seats, they're going to keep on voting the way they always voted because they genuinely believe in those things. They're not just doing it to get the money. It's the other way around. They got the money because they're committed to doing those things. So Biden really genuinely believes this. And I'll bring you back to a moment in history that's also getting very low distribution right now, even though some people, you know, some progressive media are trying to bring it out. Elizabeth Warren, who is one of the candidates for president and one of the ones that the press is not giving much of a leg up, was a professor at Harvard specializing in bankruptcy law. That's how you know she eventually would later, when Barack Obama became president several years later, that's how she got hired to be the person that, remember how she came to public attention, was as the person Barack Obama had hired to analyze the banking crisis, the banking collapse, and make recommendations on how to prevent it from happening again. So she was already a world-renowned expert on bankruptcy law and teaching it at Harvard Law School. And she was brought down to Congress to testify about the importance of allowing bankruptcy protection for ordinary debt consumers to continue and the potential devastation to our economy, let alone people's individual lives, from removing this bankruptcy protection. And Joe Biden took her on. Joe Biden was the person who interrogated her, aggressively during her testimony. And his perspective, believe it or not, the same one that you always hear, is that by allowing this bankruptcy protection to debt consumers, that we would be creating a massive moral hazard that would allow people to believe that they could declare bankruptcy even when they're not really bankrupt, as a way of weaseling out of their debts, and that such protection would be unfair to the lenders. Like, this is the real Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden went on into a Senate hearing to attack Liz Warren on the grounds that protection from bankruptcy due to inability to pay burdensome debt was unfair to Wall Street. Okay, now this man is running for president.
but since, Elizabeth Warren has declared, she has not mentioned anything about lifting, the law against bankruptcy protection for student loan debt borrowers. She hasn't mentioned that at all.
Yeah, I feel it may be because that she's generally had that as a political theme of hers, and maybe she feels it's not the big item to attract a press flurry at this. I can't speak for her. I don't know why she's not making that, but unlike Joe Biden, who has made protecting Wall Street from defaulting, borrowers, his main passionate theme, at least with Liz Warren, we can trace her entire career from when she was teaching at Harvard and advocating in Congress for bankruptcy protection through her work during the Obama administration to the current day, that I think we can feel comfortable that she is approachable on this issue, right? I mean, it has been, banking abuse has been her signature issue, just the way, we were talking about people who have signature issues. Certainly Bernie Sanders has spoken about it. So there. It is coming up, but it's just not reaching the level where the press considers it a ratings generator. And the candidates themselves, as campaign strategy, they tend to focus on things that the media is willing to broadcast as potentially attracting ratings. And so one of the things that people involved in student debt relief advocacy have to start thinking about right now is, how do we do what other people in the past that have elevated the visibility of their issue, how do we make that happen for student debt? When Martin Luther King started his movement, he raised its visibility by bringing people to lunch counters by putting people in buses who would refuse to give up their seats, by marching down streets where they had been prohibited from marching, and bringing down the kind of police response and media response that was bound to generate. We spoke earlier, we had a matter here in New Paltz, where I live, which I was part of myself, because my assignment was to be the person that called the media. When our young mayor back in early 2004, Jason West, was about to illegally conduct same-sex weddings here in New Paltz under his authority as mayor, which carries with it the legal ability to marry people, just like a judge or a priest, that the press, much to my surprise, turned out in such droves to bear witness to this breaking of the law, that it then was elevated not only to a national level, but an international level, and it became impossible for seated legislators at state or federal levels to not start expressing an opinion and evolving their opinion about whether civil unions were an insufficient solution and whether marriage was the way that we'd have to go. And we know which way that turned, right? Everyone turned towards marriage, and now marriage is legal everywhere in the country. And in no small part because a Republican Supreme Court justice decided to go along with the evolution of public interest on the question. So, none of these candidates are going to make this one of their top bullet points unless people involved in the movement find a way to require that they make it a top bullet point. And the only way to make that happen is to figure out how to make the press turn it into something that's going to be on television. that's the sequence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so when that happens, people will start talking openly about how this is really all Joe Biden's fault.
Okay, but the thing of it is, somebody who has to pay $500 a month, that automatically it goes to the banks, and they're afraid of, default or whatever. Okay, so these people are in fear that they have to pay this. That money is taken out of maybe disposable income. How come with 44 million Americans, these people are not screaming and said, I want more income so that I could live a quality life and get the job that I went to college to get?
I think a lot of those people are screaming about that, but I think that there is a sort of a conflict built into them screaming about it that keeps it away from the press, which is that they have a vested interest, right? They are the ones that are burdened by the debt, and their motive in screaming about it is not that they're trying to help the economy, or that they're literally like, I'm the person paying the money and I can't afford it. So they have a vested interest in making those statements. I've experienced this before when the testing mandates at the schools started happening and the teachers started complaining about that. It was very easy for the press and for the people that were promoting the testing to say that, well, of course they're complaining about it. They don't want it going into their teacher, ability evaluations. And that's exactly why we need to have this testing, because the teachers don't want to be evaluated. And here they're complaining. And of course they're complaining because they have an angle. And I was telling people on the school board at that time and in school boards throughout New York State, because we were all against testing, we need to be the ones that go out on point about this testing being bad, because we don't have an angle. we're just elected officials. We don't have the testing. The results of the testing doesn't affect us. And so we would be seen as credible people opposing the testing on the grounds that they actually don't produce the kind of rating results that the testing advocates were claiming they could produce. It's very important when something is going to get into the public realm that you find people to speak to the issue that are not going to personally gain if they get what they're seeking. in terms of legislation. And it doesn't mean that they're not saying the right thing. It just means that it becomes too easy for the people that oppose them to reject their argument on the grounds that, that they will personally gain if they get the outcomes they want. Same way that I can show that the banks will personally gain if they don't get what they're seeking. And so those two sides have vested interests in promoting something that, depending on how it works out, will be to their own advantage financially. And so what needs to happen, what makes the difference, is to start bringing people into the conversation, like we talked about last time, about how the massive – we need to bring the business community in, right? You need to bring people that build the home construction industry into it and have them go before Congress and say – nobody's buying houses. Who ever heard of a 32-year-old not buying a house? A 32-year-old with a college degree who can't buy a house.
Right.
Like, how are we supposed to stay alive as an industry if the most eligible home buyers, which are, you know, college graduates who are in their early 30s and arriving at what should be the peak of their earning power and the peak of their interest in getting married and buying a house, simply cannot get married and buy a house because their debt levels are too high and they have no disposable income besides what they're spending to repay their student loans. Like, that would be the way to finally change the way that the media treats the issue and that Congress treats the issue.
Okay, so we have a little over a minute left. Let me ask you this. Back in the early 2000s, when Biden was the water boy for the banking industry, do you think that he foresaw what was going to happen?
Yes.
And did the banks foresee what was going to happen?
Yes. Yes, they both, yes to both of those. He foresaw it. The banks foresaw it. And they didn't care because they were only focused on their own short-term goal of lending at interest. Like, you have to remember, for a bank, a loan is the product. It's a product they sell at a profit. You know, I make a car, I build it for $15,000 and I sell it for $22,000. The banks will issue a $50,000 loan and they're going to collect $60,000 for having issued it. That's all they care about. It's what's happening, what's on the table right now. You know, in terms of the me moving my product and deriving a fixed percentage of profit on that product. So, yes, of course, they all knew. They just didn't care.
Okay, so we're out of time today. So this is a conversation that will be continued. You have been listening to Steve Greenfield talking about Joe Biden. This is All Exits Closed. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Steve, thanks for taking the time to be on All Exits Closed. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.